welcome to a half hour of Mind Web. Short stories from the world of psychological fiction. The Mind Web story this time is by Philip K. Dick. Copyright January of 1953 by Amazing Magazine. This is The Builder.
E.J. Elwood, Liz said anxiously. You aren't listening to anything we're saying, and you're not eating a bite. What in the world is the matter with you? Sometimes I just can't understand you.
For a long time, there was no response. Ernest Elwood continued to stare past them, staring out the window at the semi-darkness beyond as if hearing something they did not hear. At last he sighed, drawing himself up in his chair, almost as if he were going to say something, but then his elbow knocked against his coffee cup and he turned instead to steady the cup, wiping spilled brown coffee from its side. Sorry, he murmured. Sorry, what were you saying?
Eat, dear.
His wife said. She glanced at the two boys as she spoke to see if they had stopped eating also.
You know, I go to a great deal of trouble to fix your food.
Bob, the older boy, was going right ahead, cutting his liver and bacon carefully into bits. But sure enough, little Toddy had put down his knife and fork as soon as EJ had, and now he, too, was sitting silently staring down at his plate.
See?
Liz said.
See? You're not setting a very good example for the boys. Eat up your food. It's getting cold. You don't want to eat cold liver, do you? There's nothing worse than liver when it gets cold and the fat all over the bacon hardens. It's harder to digest cold fat than anything else in the world, especially lamb fat. They say a lot of people can't eat lamb fat at all. Dear, please eat.
Elwood nodded. He lifted his fork and spooned up some peas and potatoes, carrying them to his mouth. Little Toddy did the same gravely and seriously, a small addition of his father.
Say,
Bob said.
We had an atomic bomb drill at school today. We lay under the desks. Is that right?
But Mr. Pearson, our science teacher, says that if they drop a bomb on us, the whole town will be demolished. So I can't see what good getting under the desk will do.
I think you ought to realize what advances science has made. There are bombs now that'll destroy miles, leaving nothing standing.
You sure know a lot, Toddy muttered.
Ah, shut up. Boys,
Liz said.
That's true. Yeah, a fellow I know is in the Marine Corps Reserve, and he says they'll have new weapons that'll destroy wheat crops and poison water supplies with some kind of crystals.
Heavens!
But they didn't have things like that in the last war. Atomic development came almost at the end, without there really being an opportunity to make use of it on a full scale. Dad, isn't that right? I'll bet when you were in the Army, you didn't have any of the fully atomic...
Elwood threw down his fork. He pushed his chair back and stood up. Liz stared up in astonishment at him, her cup half raised. Bob's mouth hung open, his sentence unfinished. Little Toddy said nothing. Liz said,
Dear, what's the matter?
I'll see you later. They gazed after him in amazement as he walked away from the table out of the dining room. They heard him go into the kitchen and pull open the back door. A moment later, the back door slammed behind him.
He went out in the backyard, Mom. Mom, was he always like this? Why does Dad act so funny? It isn't some kind of war psychosis he got in the Philippines, is it? You know, in the First World War, they called it shell shock, but now they know it's a form of war psychosis. Is it something like that, Mom?
Eat your food. Oh, darn that, man. I just can't imagine.
The boys ate their food. It was dark out in the backyard. The sun had set, and the air was cool and thin, filled with dancing specks of night insects. And in the next yard, Joe Hunt was working, raking leaves from under his cherry tree. He nodded to Elwood. Elwood walked slowly down the path across the yard toward the garage. He stopped, his hands in his pockets. By the garage, something immense and white loomed up, a vast pale shape in the evening gloom. As he stood gazing at it, a kind of warmth began to glow inside him. It was a strange warmth, something like pride, a little pleasure mixed in, and excitement. Looking at the boat always made Elwood excited. Even when he was first starting on it, he had felt a sudden raise of his heart, the shaking of his hands, sweat on his face. His boat. He grinned, walking closer. He reached up and thumped the solid side. What a fine boat it was. And coming along damn well. Almost done. A lot of work had gone into that. A lot of work and time. Afternoons off from work, Sundays, and even sometimes early in the morning before work. That was best, early in the morning, with the bright sun shining down in the air, good smelling and fresh, everything wet and sparkling. He liked that time best of all, and there was no one else up to bother him and ask him questions. He thumped the solid side again. A lot of work and material, all right. Lumber and nails, sawing and hammering and bending. Of course, Toddy had helped him. He certainly couldn't have done it alone. No doubt of that. If Toddy hadn't drawn the lines on the boards and... Hey, Joe Hunt said. Elwood started turning. And Joe was leaning on the fence looking at him. Sorry. What did you say, Joe? Your mind was a million miles off, Elwood. He took a puff on his cigar. Nice night, isn't it? Yes. That's really some bulk you got there, Elwood. Thanks. Elwood walked away from it back toward the house. Good night, Joe. How long is it you've been working on that boat? You know, it seems like about a year and all, don't it? About 12 months? You sure put a lot of time and effort into it. It seems like every time I see you, you're carting lumber back there and sawing and hammering away.
Elwood nodded, moving toward the back door.
You even got your kids working on it. Now, at least a little tyke. Yeah, it's quite a boat. Here, you sure must be going to go quite a way with it by the size of it. Now, Elwood, just exactly, where was it you told me you were going? I forget.
There was silence.
I can't hear you, Elwood. Speak up. A boat that big, you must be...
Lay off.
What's the matter, Elwood? I'm just having a little harmless fun pulling your leg. But seriously, where are you going with it? You going to drag it down to the beach and float it? I know a guy had a little sailboat. He, you know, fits onto a trailer cart, hooks it up to his car. He drives down to the yacht harbor every week or so. Oh, my God, Elwood, you can't get that big thing onto a trailer. You know, I heard about a guy built a boat in his cellar once. He got it done, you know. You know what he discovered? Well, he discovered the boat was so big when he tried to get it out the door.
Liz Elwood came to the back door, snapping on the kitchen light and pushing the door open. She stepped out onto the grass, her arms folded.
Good evening, Mrs. Elwood. Sure, nice night. Good evening. E.J., for heaven's sake, are you going to come in?
Sure. Elwood reached out listlessly for the door.
Sure, I'm coming in.
Good night, Joe.
Well, good night.
Hunt watched the two of them go inside. The door closed. The light went off. Hunt shook his head.
Funny guy. Yeah, getting funnier all the time, too. Like he's in a different world. Him and his boat.
Joe Hunt went inside.
She was just 18, Jack Frederick said. Just 18, but she sure knew what it was all about.
All the Southern girls are that way, Charlie said. It's the climate. Yeah, they ripen faster. It's like fruit, nice, soft, ripe, slightly damp fruit.
There's a passage in Hemingway like that, Ann Pike said. I can't remember what it's from. He compares it.
But, you know, the way they talk. Who can stand the way those Southern girls talk?
What's the matter with the way they talk? They talk different, but you get used to it.
Why can't they talk right?
What do you mean?
Why, they talk like colored people.
That's because they all come from the same region. Are you saying this girl was colored? No, of course not. Now finish your pie. Okay, it's almost 1. We have to be getting on back to the office.
Well, I'm not finished eating yet. Hold on.
You know, there's a lot of colored people moving into my area. There's a real estate sign up on a house about a block from me. All races welcome, it says. I almost fell over dead when I saw it.
What'd you do?
Well, I didn't do anything. What can you do? You know, if you work for the government, you can put a colored man or a Chinese next to you, and you can't do anything about it?
Yeah, except quit.
Well, it interferes with your right to work. How can you work like that? Answer me. There's too many pinks in the government. That's how they got that about hiring people for government jobs without looking to see what race they belong to. They got that during WPA days when Harry Hopkins was in.
You know where Harry Hopkins was born? He was born in Russia.
And that was Sidney Hillman.
That's all the same. They all ought to be sent back there.
Ernest Elwood was sitting quietly reading his paper, not saying anything. Around him, the cafeteria was alive. With movement and noise, everyone was eating and talking, coming and going back and forth.
E.J., are you all right?
Yes. He's reading about the White Sox. He has that intent look, you know. Yeah, I took my kids to the game the other night and...
Hey, come on, we have to get back.
They all rose. Elwood folded his newspaper up silently and put it into his pocket.
Say, you're not saying much,
Charlie said to him as they went up the aisle. Elwood glanced up. Sorry.
Yeah, Elwood, I've been meaning to ask you something. Do you want to come over Saturday night for a little game? You haven't played with us for a hell of a long time. Don't ask him, Jack said, paying for his meal at the cash register. He always wants to play queer games like Deuces Wild, baseball, spit in the ocean.
Straight poker for me, Charlie said.
Come on, Elwood. The more the better. Have a couple of brews and chew the fat. Get away from the wife, huh? Yeah, one of these days we're going to have a good old steak party, Elwood.
He winked at Elwood.
You know the kind I mean? We get some gals together, have a little show.
He made a motion with his hand. Elwood moved off.
Yeah, maybe I'll think it over.
He paid for his lunch, then he went outside, out onto the bright sidewalk. The others were still inside, waiting for Ann. Suddenly, Elwood turned and walked hurriedly down the sidewalk away from the cafeteria. He turned the corner quickly and found himself on Cedar Street, in front of a television store. Shoppers and clerks out in their lunch hour pushed and crowded past him, laughing and talking, bits of their conversations rising and falling around him like waves of the sea. He stepped into the doorway of the television shop and stood, his hands in his pockets, like a man hiding from the rain. What was the matter with him? Maybe he should see a doctor. The sounds, the people, everything bothered him. Noise and motion everywhere. He wasn't sleeping enough at night. Maybe it was something in his diet. And he was working so damn hard out in the yard. By the time he went to bed at night, he was exhausted. Elwood rubbed his forehead. People and sounds talking, streaming past him, endless shapes moving in the streets and stores. In the window of the television shop, a big television set blinked and winked a soundless program, the images leaping merrily. Elwood watched passively. A woman in tights was doing acrobatics, first a series of splits, then cartwheels and spins. She walked on her hands for a moment, her legs waving above her, smiling at the audience, and then she disappeared. And a brightly dressed man came on, leading the dog. Elwood looked at his watch. 1:55. He had 5 minutes to get back to the office. He went back onto the sidewalk and looked around the corner. Anne and Charlie and Jack and the others were no place to be seen. They had gone on. Elwood walked slowly along, past the stores, his hands in his pockets. He stopped for a moment in front of the 10-cent store, watching the milling women pushing and shoving around the imitation jewelry counters, touching things, picking them up, examining them. In the window of the drugstore, he stared at an ad for athlete's foot, some kind of powder being sprinkled between two cracked and blistered toes. He crossed the street. On the other side, he paused to look at a display of women's clothing, skirts and blouses and wool sweaters. In a color photograph, a handsomely dressed girl was removing her blouse to show the world her elegant bra. Elwood passed on. The next window was suitcases, luggage, and trunks. Luggage. He stopped, frowning. Something wandered through his mind. Some loose, vague thought, too nebulous to catch. He felt suddenly a deep inner urgency. He examined his watch. 1:10. He was late. He hurried to the corner and stood waiting impatiently for the light to change. A handful of men and women pressed past him, moving out to the curb to catch an oncoming bus. Elwood watched the bus. It halted, its doors opening. The people pushed into it, and suddenly Elwood joined them, stepping up the steps of the bus. The doors closed behind him as he fished out change from his pocket. A moment later, he took his seat next to an immense old woman with a child on her lap. Elwood sat quietly, his hands folded, staring ahead and waiting as the bus moved off down the street, moving toward the residential district. When he got home, there was no one there. The house was dark and cool. Elwood went to the bedroom and got his old clothes from the closet. He was just going out into the backyard when Liz appeared in the driveway, her arms loaded with groceries.
EJ, what's the matter? Why are you home?
I don't know. I took some leave. It's all right. Liz put her packages down on the fence.
Now, for heaven's sake. You frightened me, Elwood.
She stared at him intently.
You took leave?
Yes.
How much does that make this year?
How much leave have you taken and all?
I don't know.
You don't know? Well, is there any left?
Left for what? Liz stared at him. Then she picked up her packages and went inside the house, the back door banging after her. Elwood frowned. What was the matter? He went on into the garage and began to drag lumber and tools out onto the lawn beside the boat. He gazed up at it. It was square, big and square, like some enormous solid packing crate. Lord, but it was solid. He had put endless beams into it. There was a covered cabin with a big window, the roof tarred over. Quite a boat. He began to work. Presently, Liz came out of the house. She crossed the yard silently so that he did not notice her until he came to get some large nails.
Well?
Liz said. Elwood stopped for a moment. What is it? Liz folded her arms. Elwood became impatient. Well, what is it? What are you looking at me for?
Did you really take more leave? I can't believe it, Elwood. You really came home again to work on that?
Elwood turned away.
Wait.
She came up beside him.
Wait, don't walk off from me. Stand still.
Be quiet, will you? Don't shout.
I am not shouting. I want to talk to you. I want to ask you something. May I ask you something you don't mind talking to me?
Elwood nodded.
Why? Why, Elwood? Will you tell me that? Why?
Why what?
That thing. What is it? Why are you here in the yard in the middle of the day for a whole year? It's been like this. At the table last night, all of a sudden you get up and walk out. Why? What's it all for?
It's almost done. A few more licks here and there, and it'll be...
And then what?
Liz came around in front of him, standing in his path.
And then what? What are you going to do with it, Elwood? Sell it? Float it? All the neighbors are laughing at you. Everybody in the block knows about you and this. The kids at school make fun of Bob and Toddy. They tell them their father is that he's...
That he's crazy?
Crazy, Jay. Tell me what it's for. Will you do that? Maybe I can understand. You never told me. Wouldn't it help? Can't you even do that?
I can't.
You can't? Why not?
Because I don't know. I don't know what it's for. Maybe it isn't for anything.
But if it isn't for anything, why do you work on it?
I don't know. I like to work on it. Maybe it's like whittling. Elwood waved his hand impatiently. Yeah, I've always had a workshop of some kind. When I was a kid, I used to build model airplanes. I have tools. I've always had tools.
But why do you come home in the middle of the day?
I get restless.
Why?
I hear people talking. It makes me uneasy. I want to get away from them. There's something about it all, about them, their ways. Maybe I have claustrophobia.
Shall I call Dr. Evans and make an appointment?
No. I'm all right. Please, Liz. Just get out of the way so I can work, will you? I want to finish.
And you don't even know what it's for. So, all this time you've been working without knowing why, like some animal that goes out at night and fights like a cat on the back fence to leave your work and ask to...
Get out of the way.
Listen to me. Listen, you put down that hammer and come inside. You're putting your suit on and going right back to the office, Elwood. Do you hear? If you don't, I'm never going to let you inside the house again. You can break down the door if you want with your hammer, but it'll be locked for you from now on if you don't forget that boat and go back to work.
There was silence. Get out of the way, Elwood said. I have to finish. Liz stared at him.
You're going on?
The man pushed past her.
You're going to go ahead? There's something wrong with you. Something wrong with your mind. You're...
Stop, Elwood said, looking past her. Liz turned. Toddy was standing silently in the driveway, his lunch pail under his arm. His small face was grave and solemn. He did not say anything to them.
Todd, is it that late already?
Toddy came across the grass to his father. Oh, boy, how was school?
Fine. I'm going in the house. I meant it, E.J. Remember, I meant it.
She went up the walk. The back door slammed behind her. Elwood sighed. He sat down on the ladder leading up the side of the boat and put his hammer down. Toddy was waiting without speaking. At last, Elwood said, Well, boy,
What do you say? What do you want done, Dad? Done? Well, there's not too much left. A few things here and there. We'll be through soon. You might look around for some boards we didn't nail down on the deck. Almost done. Now, we've been working a long time. You can paint if you want. I want to get the cabin painted. Red, I think. How would red be? Green. Green? All right. There's some green porch paint in the garage. You want to start stirring it up? Sure. And Toddy headed toward the garage. Elwood watched him go. Toddy?
Yes?
Toddy, wait a minute. I want to ask you something.
What is it, Dad?
You don't mind helping me, do you? You don't mind working on the boat? Toddy looked up gravely into his father's face. He said nothing. For a long time, the two of them gazed at each other. Okay. Okay, Toddy, you run along and get the paint started. Bob came swinging along the driveway with two of the kids from the junior high school. Hi, Dad, he called. Say, how's it coming? Fine, Elwood told him. Look, Bob said to his pals, pointing to the boat. Well, you see that? You know what that is? What is it, one of them said. Bob opened the kitchen door. That's an atomic-powered sub. He grinned, and the two boys grinned. It's full of uranium-235. Dad's going all the way to Russia with it, and when he gets through, there won't be a thing left in Moscow. The boys went inside. The door slammed behind them. Elwood stood looking up at the boat. In the next yard, Mrs. Hunt stopped for a moment with taking down her washing, looking at him and the big square hull rising above him.
Is it really atomic-powered, Mr. Elwood?
No.
Well, what makes it run, then? I don't see any sails. What kind of motor is in it? Steam?
Elwood bit his lip. Strangely, he had never thought of that part. There was no motor in it, no motor at all. There were no sails, no boiler. He'd put no engine into it, no turbines, no fuel, nothing. It was a wood hull, an immense box, and that was all. He had never thought of what would make it go, never, in all the time he and Toddy had worked on it. Suddenly, a torrent of despair descended over him. There was no engine, nothing. It was not a boat. It was only a great mass of wood and tar and nails. It would never go, never leave the yard. Liz was right. He was like some kind of animal going out into the yard at night to fight and kill in the darkness, to struggle dimly without sight or understanding, equally blind, equally pathetic. What had he built it for? He did not know. Where was it going? He did not know that either. What would make it run? How would he get it out of the yard? What was it all for, to build without understanding, darkly like a creature in the night? Toddy came from the garage, stirring the quart can of paint. He nodded to his father and set the can down by the ladder, and then he went back to get the brush. Toddy had worked alongside him the whole time. Why had he worked? Did he know? Did the boy know what the boat was for? Why they were building? Toddy had never asked. The boy had never asked because he trusted his father to know. But he did not know. He, the father, he did not know either. And soon it would be done, finished, ready. And then what? Soon Toddy would lay down his paintbrush, cover the last can of paint, put away the nails, the scraps of wood, hang the saw and hammer up in the garage again. And then he would ask. Ask the question he had never asked before, but which must come finally. And he could not answer him. Elwood stood staring up at it, the great hulk they had built, struggling to understand. Why had he worked? What was it all for? When would he know? Would he ever know? For an endless time, he stood there, staring up. It was not until the first great black drops of rain began to splash about him that he understood.
Wilder by Philip K. Dick. Copyright 1953 by Amazing Magazine. This is Michael Hansen. Technical operation for this program by Dusty Tonto and Rich Grody. Mindwebs is produced at WHA Radio, Madison.